Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast with my dad, Ted Knightsey.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsey. Hey, over the past 3 weeks, I've been doing webinars here at CSA6 for parents. It was a three-part series on high school, middle school, and elementary-aged children. Each of them was different, but had a core theme that ran through each of them. As I prepped and delivered and then read the feedback, a thought occurred to me, and that was to put together an episode on the core qualities of great families. Buffalo parenting. My journey and unscientific research into families began a long time ago, and it was when I was a first-year teacher. During my formative years in college and while student teaching, I was very fortunate to meet lots of different people, kids, teachers, parents, principals, etc. But from the perspective of a teacher is when I began to see kids different, not as a friend or a neighbor, cousin, brother, or casual observer, but as a person who was now responsible for the well-being of other kids. And that takes on a little different mindset. When you're in college preparing to be a teacher, the education department does something very wise. They expose you to all different educational settings. I taught in an urban setting in a middle school, an elementary school, and a high school in Milwaukee, suburban high schools, and rural middle schools. Regardless of the color of skin, money in the wallet, career of their parents or guardians, background, trauma, or life experiences, there was a certain type of kid that always presented him or herself to me in a way that was really impressive. As a result, over time, I would start to seek out the parents or guardians of these kids and ask them questions. Over the course of my career, I started with a hypothesis about what qualities these kids experienced and had in their lives, and then I just kept getting the same themes confirmed over and over and over. That's what I want to share with you today. But before I get into those qualities, I'd like to review with you our long-standing metaphor about being buffalo. Remember that a buffalo leader is anyone who runs into the storms that challenge them, and when they do so, others follow, and a growing sense of optimism prevails. Through the shared experiences and willingness to address their problems, these buffalo leaders grow to be perseverant, tenacious, and free of a weight of negativity. They jump over pits of pessimism, and they drive forward through life. As children, it is through these examples of the people around us that we learn to take risks. We learn to recover from failure. We learn to collaborate, and we learn the ways to a successful life. When we are neglected, ignored, and not engaged as little ones, we learn from others. So even if we don't have exposure to how to deal with things that throw life in the weird ways in our homes, we seek examples and strategies in other worlds, our friends' homes, our classrooms, our relatives' homes, and our social settings. Children are always learning, growing, and observing. They are always hungry to find an inner sense of peace and love. I'm not talking like hippie style. I mean real peace about who they are and a real sense of love, meaning they are needed and they feel valued. Where did I first find this? Well, it was in a high school hallway during my first year of teaching. And the story ends with me thinking to myself, I want a kid like that, and I want to be friends with people like that. I was standing in the hallway before the start of the school day, and a group of juniors were standing together, and they were talking about doing something that was not really going to be a good choice. Because I always stood in the same spot, after a while, kids tend to forget that you're there, and I was playing the wallflower, so I just listened to how they were going to sneak into another friend's locker after school, grab all their stuff, and distribute it all over the building. A relatively harmless prank, but it would be upsetting for the recipient. As they were finalizing their plans, and I was thinking to myself, I'm going to wait for them at the end of the day, and then I'm going to pop out and tell them to leave. A friend of theirs was walking up, and the crew was laughing, and they waved the young man over. I knew this kid a little bit. He was in my homeroom. He was really nice, really funny, and he always seemed to be pretty chill and accepted. His name was Adam. He walked up to the group, and they started to loop him into their plan. He just stood there listening, almost emotionless, as his friends excitedly explained their prank. His friends were truly engaged, and when they finished, Adam simply said, "That's a bad idea," and he walked away. The group immediately deflated, and the kid I thought was the group's leader said, "Yeah, never mind," and then they dispersed. I watched Adam walk down the hall, and I had my eyes open to someone I didn't realize even existed in high school, a child, albeit 17 years old, but a kid nonetheless who had confidence but wasn't cocky. who was kind and caring, but not arrogant. And he was not focused on how others saw him. A kid who was accepted by all groups, who was kind to adults, who seemed to solve his own issues, a kid who was responsible and happy, a kid who was satisfied and calculated about his interests, who was intrinsically motivated and worked hard on things he cared about. And foremost, he didn't do what others wanted. He did what he felt was right and what he wanted. And I was like, what a peculiar person. In my first years of teaching, I hadn't been out of high school that long, so I remembered really well all the weird social pressures, how I worked for the acceptance of others, and how I would take really dumb risks. As a matter of fact, if I had walked into that same situation that Adam had, I can guarantee I would have been all in. A few weeks later, I began to observe that there were many more kids like Adam. They fit in with everyone. They wanted to work with other people, and they were really comfortable in their own skin. They accepted who they were and were not, and they were not going to be influenced by anyone. So in fall, when parent-teachers conferences came, I started to ask their parents, what's your home like? And over the course of my, holy cow, 3 decades in education, I still do it. Each time I come across kids that are truly unique, kind, perseverant, and willing to take risks in an effort to grow and be better, as well as caring about others, I want to find out what those parents or guardians are doing. And here's what I found. 1, and most importantly, it doesn't matter who's raising the child. It can be a mom and dad, a mom or dad, mom and mom, dad and dad, divided families, grandparents, older siblings, foster parents, neighbors. If they hit these conditions, the children are just amazing, as I described. And here's what I found year after year after year, family after family after family. Great families have these qualities or ingredients. They have shared experiences, routines and responsibility, predictability. They problem solve together. They're honest in their home. The kids and the family is the center of the universe. And there's love. As I walk you through these conditions, don't focus on what you're not doing. Instead, listen for what you can do. Also, if you don't have your own children, how do you create these conditions when you are around children, in the classroom, in the community, in other homes, or when you're with your nieces and nephews, neighbors, grandchildren, or otherwise? As I begin this discussion, I want to share one thematic disclosure. When I interview parents and guardians, they are all hyper aware of a truth. That is that their time raising and caring for children is short. They are the people who actually listened when older people told them, who were much wiser, to enjoy every moment, because one of these days, you're going to miss that. They live life as parents and guardians the same way people live life worrying about death. They get it. They get that they only have 18 years to develop and then more time, but different time as the children move forward into independence. They understand that our jobs as parents and guardians is short-lived, and it's an investment into the child. It's at no point about just the parents. Their selflessness breeds selflessness, and these kids exhibit it everywhere they go. There's no recipe to having great kids, but there are ingredients to making a great family. We each just have to spice it up the way we want to. Now, before I get into these key ingredients and their descriptions, one thing I want you to keep in mind. These families, regardless of what order of ingredients they have or if they even have all of these, they have one thing, and that's that they have high expectations for each other and share accountability. All right, ingredient 1, shared experiences. Families who live together grow together. Simple. Many times, parents believe that they need to do things on their own, and that is true, but great families focus on shared experiences. We are all learning all of the time. We're wired to be keen observers of our worlds, and as a result, we are always looking for a better way. Well, when you have shared experiences, you are creating memories, interactions, and commonality. Parents who travel with their kids grow. And I'm not talking about Europe. I'm talking about going on hikes, museums, parks, just walks. Being together is the core of the family. As we grow to have independent children, it comes from them constantly seeing how the world works, how parents and guardians deal with conflict, make sacrifices, and keep the family first. Shared experiences also provide a constant opportunity to recall, relearn, and invest. When we are together, we collaborate, we fight, we resolve, we see what we want and don't want. We evolve through experiences, and that is how kids grow and develop. which is why the second ingredient is important, routines and responsibility. Starting at a very early age, the child and the family have clearly identified roles and routines. Irresponsible kids come from a lack of routines and responsibility. What I mean by this is that in the absence of expectations and certainty, kids fill the void. They make mistakes and they take negative risks. You know why? It's their nature to explore and seek out expanded boundaries. We were all born curious. It's why babies, when they start crawling, get into stuff and trouble. What's this? What does this feel like? What does this taste like? That's what we do. That's what little people do. But great families have routines and responsibilities. Kids have jobs. They have standards. They are expected to be contributing members of the family, and they have natural consequences. If they spill something, they're expected to be part of the cleanup. If they break something carelessly, they don't get it replaced. They are responsible for the things that they benefit from. Period. Parents who run around mowing the lawn and making sure their kids can't get hurt if they fall are creating kids who are enabled and lack individuality and ownership. Routines and responsibilities, beginning at an early age, produce young adults who understand that they have to get themselves out of the situations that they are facing. It's okay if they get hurt. It's how we learn to become resilient. Overprotect your children from responsibility, and you'll create someone who has no ability to take ownership for themselves. Let someone slip and fall, and they learn to be careful, recognize they are responsible for themselves, and grow to be confident and independent and not worry about being popular, but being good. The third ingredient is predictability. Very simple. Great families are predictable. This will make so-and-so upset. This will make so-and-so happy. This will make so-and-so excited. This will get so-and-so to reinforce my actions. I know if so-and-so finds out, this is what will happen to me. Confidence comes from being able to navigate your world. Unpredictable households where no one knows what just set someone off are traumatic. They lead to kids who are unpredictable, unstable, sad, and fragile. If you grow up in an environment where your rules and rewards shift beneath your feet daily, it's unnerving. Here's a tip for parents and guardians. If you do lose your mind and blow up for no apparent reason, which we all do, there is a simple truth. Once you've come to your senses, which might be in 10 minutes or 10 hours, bring everyone back together and dissect what set you off. Apologize and indicate that you're going to work on it. In short, seek forgiveness and fix it. I heard parents talk about that all the time. Vulnerable parents are demonstrating to others that they're human. Leaving the anger or outburst out there for interpretation is dangerous because once you recover and then you act like nothing happened and the family sees you, well, they see you like a crazy person. Every event, good or bad, needs reflection and closure. The next ingredient plays right into the last one. Problems solve together. Hey, when life gets real, great families sit down and problem solve. It begins when parents share with kids a problem that has emerged and then discuss how to solve it. When they talk about work and life, parents share with the kids not just the great parts, but also the bad parts and how they're dealing with it. When you come home sullen from a rough patch of life, you don't demand space as a parent. You process. Too many parents try to hide their struggles. Well, I have news for you. There are no secrets in a house. Your children have been studying you from the second they came out, and they feel shifts in energy and attitude. So, call it out, process it, and share it. Grief, disappointment, loss, and failure, well, those are opportunities to grow the family. One of the strongest statements a parent can say to their children when they're truly struggling, as the adult, is, "I don't know." Kids see us like encyclopedias, filled with knowledge and answers. Confidence in little people comes from knowing that there isn't always an answer, but they've seen from their parents that you can keep going, keep living, and keep learning as you try to figure out life. It's a really powerful example, and it builds resilience. And that leads directly into the next ingredient, honesty. Great kids learn to tell the truth because they've been around honesty their entire lives. When there is conflict, be honest about it. When the kids ask a question, don't lie or minimize. Be smart, but be honest. If the family is facing struggles, disclose, process, and guide. Don't paint grandiose pictures. Lack of honesty leads to disappointment and a lack of trust in you in the future. If it's not going to be okay, tell them. I don't think it's going to be okay. And here is what is going to happen. Confident kids grow that way because they see patterns of success and failure. They see adults struggle, and they are part of the process, not left out. Now, developmental considerations need to be taken into consideration, but once your kids are 9 or 10, loop them into the world they live in. Observing great families for all of these years, here's one thing that stands true. Honesty is a key part of these families' inner workings. Their kids get that it's not always going to work out, and they have learned to accept disappointment. And they also see their parents working tirelessly to make it okay. And this is only accomplished if you recognize that the family is the center of the known universe. All decisions, all allocations of time and energy and resources, all activities put the family in the center of the known universe. The playoffs might be on TV, but they're not more important than the opportunity to play catch. The news on TV does not take priority over helping your son or daughter, and your personal hobbies and lifestyle are not just yours. They're everybody's hobbies, and the family is at the center all of the time. Now, don't hear this as the children are first. They're not. The family is. Here's one of my favorite things. I love when I see this. I love it when parents have toddlers and then you see them and they're like, oh, I've watched Frozen like 100 times. Or every time we get in the car, the only way we can do anything is if we listen to Disney music for the whole ride. The reason I enjoy it? Well, it's because that's 100% their fault. If you didn't play it, it wouldn't be on all the time. Great families don't put one person first. They share the spotlight together. They listen to diverse music. They watch all kinds of stuff. They read together. They play together. They experience together. And the family is first. No one is above family, but everyone is welcome into the family. Great families protect this concept at all costs and throughout development. If your kids are never home, that's your fault. And it's never too late to say, you know what, starting this weekend, we will eat together every Sunday. So, no, you can't work on Sundays. No, you can't go to friends' houses. But you know what? Those friends can join us. Do you hear what I've learned? Family first. In our house, I have a simple question when my kids put themselves above others. Who are you putting first right now? Neither kid can ever look me in the eye when I ask them that question. And when they answer it, I don't even have to hammer back the point. They get it. So the last ingredient is the sweetest. Love. I'm going to make this very simple for you. Profess and demonstrate your love every day to your family. I don't care how old your kids are. Great families achieve greatness because there is never a doubt about your feelings for them. The word love has meaning when you give it meaning, and the most powerful thing you can do is start and end every teachable moment, every interaction and day with one simple and empowering phrase. I love you. If at any point a child wonders where they stand, they're going to act out in order to find out. Leave no doubt with your children that you love them. And that goes equally for the men and the women. Tell them you love them. It builds confidence. It's reassuring. And finally, and most importantly, they'll love others because they know how it feels to be loved. So let's do some smart thinking. List the ingredients that are part of your family. Describe where you can improve. And list the qualities of great families that you know. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. As always, thank you for listening, and please share this episode with others. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and please seek out the other webinars that are all available on CESA6.org. They're free, and you can see mine and a lot of other people much smarter than me. Thank you to the Wellpennies for their great music, and look forward to a new album. They just popped into the studio to put together some great things that they've learned about themselves and others through COVID. Finally, here's the deal. There is no such thing as a perfect or great parent or guardian. There are only people who work and worry every day about their family, reflect on how they're doing, and if they're growing from what worked and what could be better. We are all failing all over the place as people, and recognizing the opportunity for improvement is what makes us who we are. Buffalo parents. If you think you're a great parent or teacher, I have news for you. You're not. And if you think you're a horrible parent or a horrible teacher, I've got news for you. You're not. Every day, what we need to do is practice our ability to put others first, remembering that we are influencers who have great responsibility. young buffalo observe the way the older buffalo act. Sometimes they see their own parents freeze in the face of the storm. But then they see others charge, and that gives them and their parents courage. It is from the herd that we grow others to rely upon instincts. Greatness is never achieved, it's only sought. So this week, as you are going through your days, reflect upon how you present to the world, how you practice the ingredients we've talked about, and most importantly, what impression do you leave with others as a leader?